Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. You know, there are times in life where you have to reach out, stretch yourself beyond who you are now, and maybe because of life circumstances, your heritage, your family, your health, your job, or a business change, maybe because of that, you have to believe in yourself a little bit more. And I recall a time 25 years ago when my older brother suddenly passed away, and I received a call from my parents' priest who told me what had happened. And during this life event, my mom bought me a small plaque that said, "There is no other belief in life than the belief in yourself." Now, those words have resonated with me throughout my whole life. And I think I learned that it's important to believe in yourself and what you are doing, to build your confidence with every single victory, but more importantly, learn from every single loss in life. That belief in yourself is not about ego. And believe it or not, it's probably not even about yourself, but it's about an attitude that extends beyond you, allowing you to do what you can to make a difference in the world around you. And because, in the end, no matter what you believe, life is not about you, but it's about the people that you meet when you're walking down the street, the people that you meet every single day. I know I just took that from a song from Sesame Street, and we learned that when we were kids, but it's often something that I remember and maybe I say in the back of my mind. So I encourage you to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count. Now, today, my guest is the 40 under 40 success story, Jessica Damas. And hopefully I pronounced your last name correctly, Jessica, who embodies stepping out to make a difference in the world around you. And I guess she has a really good story that she can tell. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
I'm actually glad you're here. First of all, I do want to check because I didn't ask you ahead of time. Jessica Damas, is that how you pronounce
Dumas
it?
Dumas is how I pronounce it.
That's how you
it.
Pronounce
yeah,
it?
Dumas.
It's interesting. I was thinking about several books I'd written and I was looking at the spelling of your last name. And also, I remembered a movie piece that I saw where they were talking about how to pronounce your name. Last name. So that's where I learned the pronunciation.
Yeah.
So I'll have to make sure that I work on getting it correct
sure,
the way that
no problem.
You like it said. And last names are always interest me. Jessica, you know, I've gotten to read up a little bit about you on LinkedIn. I've looked up your profile on the internet in terms of what you do and everything. I think, boy, I could just sort of start rattling off things that I've learned about you in the last 24 hours just by sort of researching your background. But probably really good as you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much. And it's really, it's nice to hear that it's of interest.
Well, yeah, I guess that's me, though. I'm interested in people. So
yeah, and so am I. So thank you very much. So I'm a certified life coach. I'm a mother of three boys. I'm the third generation in my family to grow up off of reserve in the city of Winnipeg. And I find that that's important for me to talk about in some of the work that I do. And it's part of who I am. But a lot of the work that I do is group facilitation. I do one-on-one coaching, group coaching, communication skills, and a lot of stuff. I've really made a point in my life to make sure that I'm trying new things and doing what I enjoy.
Doing what you enjoy mm-hmm. doing. You mentioned that, sorry, you said you had three boys?
I do, yeah.
You have three boys. So are they younger these days or a little bit older?
No, they're getting a little bit older. I mean, I've raised them on my own for the most part of their life. I have an 18-year-old. His name is Ethan. James is 13, and Rylan is going to be 10 pretty soon.
Oh, wow.
So they're not really small anymore.
So they're not really small. They're at those ages where they're independent enough.
Yes. and it's amazing because when I was first on my own with them, you know, really hard times, it was a newborn and his older brothers and, you know, trying to make that work. And now, you know, I mean, it's still a lot of work to get them in line with what they need to do, but they're really responsible, really helpful boys, but they're still boys.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you would say that because my wife and I also have had all boys.
Okay.
And we're just at the point now where our youngest is 16 and a half, mm-hmm. and we have some freedom.
Yeah,
and
I know.
We've forgotten what that's like. You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're going out tonight for dessert, you know.
Well, my 18-year-old drives now, and so, for example, tomorrow night there's an event that I have to go to, and then Rylan has hockey practice. So I'm like, hey, you want to take your brother? So yeah. I get to go to the event that I wanted to go to. So it works out quite well.
That's a good thing. I didn't know that you were a single mom, and you're a single mom as an entrepreneur. So maybe I'd like to start there if you're okay with it.
Sure.
Let's go with how long you've been self-employed in business for yourself.
Well, it's been on and off for probably about 4 years.
4 years. Yeah. Okay.
So in between, there were times where I'd have a contract or I'd be working with an organization a little bit more part-time sort of thing.
Okay. And so the last 4 or 5 years have been more of that.
Yeah.
Then before becoming self-employed, what did you do prior to that? So let's go dig into your history a little bit.
Yeah. So when I graduated high school, I was actually employed with Manitoba Hydro, and I was there for about 9 years. And so that was, you know, a lot of customer service skills and, you know, working in a big company like that. After that work, I did restorative justice with an Aboriginal organization, and I did that for about 6 years.
Okay. So, what kind of justice?
Restorative justice.
Restorative justice. Right away, you know what I'm going to ask. What is restorative justice?
So an alternative form of justice. And so it was creating an Indigenous restorative justice program for First Nation communities in southern Manitoba. And it's basically taking a crime that's happened and restoring it through a justice circle or that sort of thing. So instead of sending the person to court and the regular justice process, we take the opportunity to say, what was going on with you? What is your relationship with the victim? And how do we restore this? You live in the same community. We want to create a more solid community. So how do we do that? And we would do that through justice circles.
That actually sounds quite fascinating.
It was amazing work.
If I understand it correctly, and you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong or define it a bit more for me. Mm-hmm. In terms of restorative justice, is that like creating balance back into your community where people start to forgive each other? Is that part of the journey?
The whole idea is a holistic process.
Holistic process,
And then, you know, creating that stronger relationship for the community. So even getting to know each other, talking about the incident, and people don't understand how much more of a responsibility it is to admit, first of all, yes, I did this, and I'm going to face it. Yeah. And I'm going to talk to the person that I hurt or offended and find a way to restore this relationship.
Since we started off with the sort of corporate speak, if I was to throw an acronym at it, it sounds like almost the perfect RACI. Now, RACI stands for Responsible, Accountable, Consult, Inform.
Okay.
Right? So accountable action, who's responsible for doing what, who do you consult with, the subject matter experts, right? And inform, who do you keep informed? And maybe that's a good place to sort of start. I don't know. I mean, it just was popped in my head.
Yeah.
This is Richard Lanner for Set for Success. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to chat a little bit more with Jessica about some of the interesting things that she's been doing and her career background. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Jessica, and we've been talking a little bit about some of the work that she's been doing. And interesting enough, some years ago, she got into restorative justice, and I didn't even know what that was until now. So I have to thank you for educating me a little bit there. And I find it fascinating because I think it's something that can apply not to, and I think you were doing the work in Aboriginal communities. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But I bet you there's other communities in our country that could use that kind of approach to things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of small towns. There's lots of places from Newfoundland right out to the West Coast that restorative justice might be something that they can use. What got you involved in restorative justice? What was the catalyst that put you into that interest in that?
So like I mentioned, I was working full time for a utility company. I was working with Manitoba Hydro since high school. It was a good career. During my time there, and at this point in my life, my younger brother was killed. He was killed by the police, and obviously it was a really public event. It was really tragic. And
very difficult.
Very difficult
for your whole family.
Yeah, for my whole family. And you know, to watch my mom go through the stages that she did, you know, I mean, it was heartbreaking. It's still heartbreaking. But I couldn't go back to work and answer the phones anymore. I felt like there's something more to life. You know, with this sort of change, something has to change. I'm not satisfied with just coming to work and talking about bills.
Yeah.
And so what was it? And I was introduced to Anishinaabemowin, which is a restorative justice project in Winnipeg. And I had the opportunity, I started volunteering there and I started doing some work there. And that was what made the change.
That was the catalyst, yeah. Right? It's amazing how often in life, no matter who you are, an event can happen that yeah. totally changes the course of what yeah. you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like this was one of those events.
It really was.
It really was. Mm-hmm. Out of that whole process and for restorative justice, what would you say are some of the lessons learned that you maybe apply today or you're taking with you? Because everything you do in life, there's mm-hmm. hopefully there's something you get out of it.
Yeah,
what
for
do you
sure.
think you've gained?
Well, I think that I gained, definitely for me in that particular situation, it was healing.
Okay.
I it allowed me to do a lot of healing. And then again, as also unique as my situation might be, it gave me the opportunity to learn about my culture, which I didn't have growing up as an Indigenous person. So it was becoming an adult and really learning who I was and how important that was without even knowing that was something that I needed.
Why would you say that maybe prior to that you didn't really learn about your culture? Why do you think that is?
Well, specifically with my grandmother, when I was a teenager, I asked her if she would teach me Soto because I knew that my grandma could speak that language with her sisters.
Okay, so that's a language.
That's an Ojibwe language. And she started laughing at me and she said, "No, you'll never use it." And at the time I thought, well, why
That's
would
sad.
She say that? I don't know why she would say that. And of course, later I learned about residential school in that era and how we were not allowed to speak our languages. So we were not allowed to learn, right? Because as children, my grandparents were taught, you're not allowed to talk about your culture. You're not allowed to talk about your language. That's forbidden. You're not doing that. And so naturally, my mom didn't learn about those things and we weren't taught those things as a kid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I mean, that would be an anchored in there. And mm-hmm. The reason why I asked that question is that I'm a small town boy, mm-hmm. right? And rooted on the East Coast of Canada. And when you grew up in a small town, especially in terms of Newfoundland and where you're isolated and everything, mm-hmm. culture is everything, mm-hmm. you know, like where your people came from, what your people are all about, from the way you dance to the way you sing to your thoughts and how you're connected mm-hmm. to another part of the world or wherever you're connected to. So mm-hmm. that's why I asked that question.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, what was the piece that sort of pulled it apart? And I know Canadian history a bit, so I could probably guess, but it's always better to I think mm-hmm. it's hear it from yourself. You've always worked on integrating yourself into your Aboriginal culture. Mm-hmm. What's been that journey been like for you?
A very emotional journey.
Okay, fair enough.
So when I started working at Anishinaabemowin, I became friends with the group that I was working with. And it was the first time that I've worked with Aboriginal people. It was the first time that I was really in an environment that was our reason for being together. That, you know, it was an Indigenous program for Indigenous youth. And it was the first time I was learning about elders. I was learning about smudging and that sort of thing. But the people that I was working with were still really great friends. And it was the first time in my life that I felt like I finally belonged somewhere. And I didn't even think that I was missing that until I had it. I was just like, oh my goodness, I feel
home.
Like, yeah. yeah. And I'm still really great friends with this group. And it like that was, if there was any gift from my brother, that's
the gift.
That's what it was.
That's the silver
that's
lining
what it is.
In a very
yeah.
terrible story.
Mm-hmm.
So you moved on from that and allowed you to go to sort of the next phase in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the next phase after the
restorative yeah.
justice?
So I did that for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And again, it was time for me to move on. And when I left the position of a manager for a restorative justice project, I was stepping away from a whole network of people that I built relationships with, and they knew me as this person, as this manager of the program. So I realized that I'd really become that position. And when I left, I realized, well, if I'm not that position anymore, who am I? And so I went through this journey of what am I here for? You know, what is life about? And, you know, I had this experience with my brother. I thought this was my purpose. And although I went through a lot of healing in the ability to be able to talk about his death and everything that sort of surrounded that, I had to really dig deep to who I wanted to be. And that became a life coach.
Oh, wow. So that sort of brought you into that journey there.
Yeah.
You know, I found a very interesting question you asked yourself was, is who do I want to be and what am I all about? Because those are powerful questions.
They are.
Yeah. This is Richard Lanham for Set for Success. And I know for the listeners, we got to take a short break. So we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. It's Richard Lanham for Set for Success. And what a show I've been having. I'm hanging out here with Jessica Dumas, and we're talking a lot about her experiences in terms of business, coming from an Aboriginal perspective, a life experience perspective, and the facilitation coaching work that she does today. In that discussion, we've been talking a little bit about lessons learned, because I think one of the things we can often learn from other people is the different life lessons that we have, either in our business or our careers or our life events, that bring us or make us to who we are. Like it's like an accumulation effect, right? It's the foundation and it builds on who we are. And sometimes, and this is one of the things I've learned from Jessica, that you got to go back to your past to learn about who you are today and into your future, which to me is like an incredible lesson learned, because how many people are afraid to look towards their past to figure out who they are today so that they have a nice, clear future for themselves? And I think Jessica just taught me that. So this is what we're going to do. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Jessica, and we're going to start to see if we can maybe unravel a few complex issues and maybe see how we actually make better business decisions, or maybe better personal life decisions. And, you know, maybe what you do to actually improve yourself in some way. I bet you Jessica has all sorts of thoughts on this. So this is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with my new best friend, Jessica. you like that, Jessica?
I do like that.
Yeah, I always like to tell people they're my new best friend when they come on the show, after I get to know them a little bit. So, yeah,
it's always a compliment.
It's like having coffee together, right? Yeah. We're just hanging out. We're having a coffee and we're just getting to know each other. And that's always the best piece. One of the things I found out about you during the break was that, like, you're like a marriage commissioner. Like, what is that all about?
You know what? Initially, like, the reason that I went to go get it, I can't even remember. But one of the things that you should know about me is I get an idea, and if I think it sounds like fun, then I try and do it.
Because you try and do it.
I just honestly believe, you know, like, you only live once, right?
Have you married a few people?
I've married a few people,
have
and
you?
It's been incredible.
Yeah.
And one of my really good friends also. So it wasn't a really complicated process to go through, but I got a certificate from the province of Manitoba, and my name is out on a registry list. And it started just through a referral. You know, a friend, my mom called me. This young lady can't find someone to marry. Her wedding's next week, whatever. Could you marry them? And I was so excited. So I did my own research. I mean, I'm really passionate about healthy relationships. And I also have witnessed really expensive weddings that haven't lasted very long because they didn't spend any time on the actual, you know, relationship part or really believing of the vows. So one of the things that I do when I meet with people is I talk about the vows and how important it is to write something really meaningful so that at a later date, good or bad times, you can look at those vows and it's something that'll strengthen
your relationship. Yeah. That is so fabulous. Yeah. That is so. Now I'm going to look into becoming a marriage counselor. I could have so much fun with that.
Counselor or commissioner?
Commissioner. No, I don't want to be a marriage counselor. No.
And you know what? It's all of the planning. Everyone loves planning weddings, right? It's fun. And I don't have a whole lot to do with the planning, but I, you know, make sure
you
that my part
is
good. But it's in the moment that it's like, oh my goodness, they're about to do this. I'm just like, what am I doing? This is amazing. Like, it's so much fun.
So one of the things you mentioned earlier on the show is that you're a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I get this whole thing about marriage commissioner and single mom. So I think that's an interesting sort of twist to things too. But obviously you've taken a very interesting journey. I mean, we talked a bit about the work that you did within the Aboriginal community and the lessons that you learned. And then it sounds to me like you took a new journey on. And did you go into being your own company after that?
And
so as a single mom, entrepreneur, what are some of the lessons learned or maybe some of the challenges or lessons learned going down that road in terms of saying, you know what, I'm going to stand on my own two feet. I'm going to create something for myself here and serve a certain customer base or client base. What's that experience been like?
Well, my first lesson was it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, very important.
Because that I think is something that a lot of people go through that, you know, I wanted to do this on my own. It's my responsibility. I'm going to be, you know, making the decisions for my family. And there were days where I'd come home and put my head between my knees because can I do this?
Yeah.
I have no choice. Yeah. I have to do this. But the lesson to be able to ask someone for help and knowing that there's nothing wrong with that was really eye-opening to me, and it's been the best thing.
Yeah, stepping out there. It's interesting you would say that. My wife and I have this discussion about the importance of asking for help and whether it's a gender question, men versus women, right?
Yeah.
Who are able to ask for help easier, men or women, right?
Yeah.
And we always come back to women do, right? And I don't know if that's right or not. I know that just in terms of some of the work that we've done in terms of women's work or men's work, and we both involved in this, is that if we do an event or involve an event and you put it out there, you know, 100 women will show up for a women's event and 10 men will show up for a men's unless there's football.
Very true. That's
football
very true.
Football and food, right?
Yeah, pizza. Yeah,
and pizza or whatever it is. And so we're always joking around about it. It's just the work that we do. I based on the sort of comments that you said, and you put your head down and everything, I suspect that you've had to learn some anxiety coping strategies along the way.
Yes, I did.
In the earlier days, what was the anxiety side for you and maybe how did you cope with
I think that the anxiety really started after I had my third son, and I was you know, left the restorative justice job for mat leave, and I was going back for a volunteer day, and I started getting like this buzzing feeling in my body, and it was just like, what is that? I don't know what that is. I've never had it, but I don't like it. And so I realized there's very little information in the world about anxiety and how common it is. So that's something that I learned quickly, is it's very common. People go through this all the time, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah, and it is part of that whole overstressed type thing, right? And prolonged anxiety, if I understand correctly, has long-term negative consequences on yourself on many levels, right? And so, but you managed to deal with
that. I do. And you know what? I've also realized that it's important to continue talking about it because I still get anxiety. I have techniques and tools that I use on a daily basis. So, the reason I talk about those things is because I want to tell people that they work. I use them all the time. And it's, you know, certain things, breathing, meditating, and just certain mental practices that help. You know, maybe anxiety is a normal thing that our bodies will just always have. I don't know. I don't know if it can be completely eliminated, but I've learned to cope with it, and I hope to encourage other people to manage it well.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question, actually, and maybe I'll have to do a whole show on anxiety some point in time, the trigger anxiety triggers and what to do with it. I can see where that'll happen. I'll probably just stressed out doing the show.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
It is kind of scary. I know that from reading some of your stuff, I read something that you're into changing thought patterns. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, that's interesting. Like, what is changing thought patterns?
I think that a lot of our, you know, what we think is what we believe, right? And so the more that we think about something, the more that we're creating something in our life. And if we're worried about something, we're thinking about something that's not going well or making it something that's really worrisome and stressful, I think that all of our habits can be brought back to, okay, what are you thinking? What are you thinking about? What do you think about this event? And how do we start to change that? And so it's usually starting with, you know, something that's easy to relate to. Change your thinking on something small and then grow it so that you can say, you know, I can think about good things, or just be happy with what it is that you're thinking mentally. And you'll know that because you'll be happier.
You know, I'd have to agree with you there. I learned a very valuable lesson from my mother. years ago, and she used to say, count your blessings, right? Mm-hmm. And it was years later in my 40s that I decided that every day I would write down mm-hmm. five of my blessings.
Yeah.
And I discovered a very fascinating thing that if you did that every morning, you just sort of felt better.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than waking up and focusing on a negative.
I think there's all these motivational phrases
yeah.
that, you know, something like that, count your blessings, that when you think about, okay, these are really old phrases. They mean stuff, right? And when you start to be more aware of them and practice them, then you realize, wow, like there's a lot of wisdom.
Who knew that
there?
My mom knew that or my grandmother
right.
knew that, right?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
and when you're young, you don't always listen. You know what? We need to take another short break. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we're going to talk to Jessica about what her future holds, her present business. This is Richard Lannan. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Lannan, and I'm hanging out with Jessica Dumas. And we've been talking a bit about her business, her background, her career, what she's learned being part of the business community, everywhere from the corporate to the Aboriginal world to her small business. Jessica, I know that you have some new journeys on the way right now, you've got a business that you're involved in. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing today. I know why we started off a little bit in the beginning segment mm-hmm. on that one, but what are you up to these days?
Sure. Well, I'm a certified life coach, and that's really what my passion is about, is helping people get to, their next level. I love being able to help someone do that. And sometimes it's with a one-on-one, sometimes it's with a couple, and sometimes it's with a group or a business.
Do you have any specific market that you target, that you work with, or is it sort of...
Well, I find that I'm really passionate about working with women, like single women.
Fair enough.
Or single parents, that sort of thing. Also small businesses who are interested in working with the Indigenous community. So that's another area, reconciliation strategies.
We talked a little bit about that, I think, when we were sort of in break, about bridging the gap between mm-hmm. non-Aboriginal and the Aboriginal business community. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you do in your present work?
And it's something that I'm really passionate about, because I've went through that journey myself, right? I've worked with a corporate company that there was no Indigenous, and then working with an Indigenous community, learning it on my own, and then, you know, so I have a pretty good view of both sides.
What are some of the big challenges to work between the non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal community, that bridging the gap? What are some of the challenges that you often see?
I think that sometimes the challenges are that just communication, you know, people not really understanding what's maybe inappropriate or what's okay. People are questioning, you know, their own actions, and, you know, in a way that's good, but sometimes you just need to go ahead and have a relationship and know that that's the priority.
That's the priority overall. Mm-hmm. It's interesting you would say that, communication is so important. Mm-hmm. And when you have distinct cultures, there are things you're supposed to do and there are other things you're not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I find myself, when I'm meeting with leaders, asking them sometimes, okay, listen, I actually don't know what the right way to communicate with you is. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit? And I'm shocked with how many times, you know, they'll sit down, and I shouldn't be, and say, well, this is okay, but this is not okay, because mm-hmm. this is what we believe in.
Right.
You know, sort of,
yeah. Also, every group is different, right? Culture is a unique thing in itself. So it's not always the same for everybody.
It's not always the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I worked out in British Columbia for a while, and the Pacific Rim. And we were working with a lot of clients in the Asian community. And we went through training as to how to communicate with that clientele.
Yeah.
Everything from holding the business cards
right.
to where we sat, to how we bowed, to, mm-hmm. you know, and I would think that those lessons would apply to any culture that you're dealing
right.
with.
Right, yeah. That need to go through that sort of orientation is very valuable. But especially here in Canada, right, because of the historic relationship and the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
So okay, yeah. I'm glad you defined. I was going, what's that acronym? There's so many of them running around.
Yeah.
You know, I agree. And the other part is that Canada is a ethnic mosaic, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, where we often refer to the United States as an ethnic melting pot. Mm-hmm. We're almost like a big blanket of mixtures
yeah.
that we've learned to try to live together commonly. And I'm not saying that
yeah.
that's easy. I would never say
it's
that.
It's definitely not.
Yeah. You mentioned it as part of your work, working with single single parents, so to speak. Now, are this single parents entrepreneurs, single parents career change?
You know what? I do often find, though, that people are coming to me with a change in their life. So it's they're changing employment, they're changing relationship status, or, you know, a really big change, whatever that might be. Or they're wanting to start a business. How do I leave a company that I know I've got a job for life to, you know, the risk of owning my own business?
The unknown.
Yeah.
Any advice for that one just off the cuff? That's a tough one, eh?
You know, it is a tough one. And I feel like I'm sometimes, like, I'm pro entrepreneurship. I really am. Because I know how much freedom it's given me. And I think that everybody should experience
be
that.
Yeah.
And like, it's 80% of small business that is keeping the economy going, right?
I believe that.
It's a huge number.
I'm a big pro small business person, too, and intermediate enterprise, too. And I'm like you. I think it's the backbone of Canadian economy. And one of the things is the freedom. You can go work out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but, you know, you might get up at five,
right?
Or you might give your evening up for your business or whatever, but it gives you that. To me, it's about that freedom, right? Lifestyle.
Another thing that I learned, and I still learn this talking with friends who, you know, are working for an employer with a very specific mandate, is, you know, when we talk about work-life balance, for an entrepreneur, that doesn't even mean anything, because you're doing something that you love, that it doesn't feel like work. So, like, my partner and I, like, at, you know, when he gets off work at this time and, you know, we're meeting for coffee or whatever to spend time together, I could still be thinking about work ideas, but to me it's not really work. It's like, oh my goodness, I have this great idea of this cool thing that I want to do. And it's so not an employee type thought.
Yeah, it's not. You know what? It's funny. I can only agree with you because I'm in that camp too. And I always try to support the business community and uncover those hidden gems. And I think you're a hidden gem.
I really do.
based on your work. If somebody wanted to contact you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, you can find me on all social media, but my website is jessicadumas.com. And then again, on there, you can find ways to reach out to me.
To reach out to you. Now, one of the things, as I was reading through your bio information, I don't quite remember now if it was your bio in a paragraph or something. It talked about building self-confidence.
Okay.
And I know from what I read, I gather you're involved in the work of building self-confidence with people. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think that, you know, in anything that we want to do, we just need that little boost. And there are a lot of great people around us, but they can only tell us so much of, you know, how good we are at something or whatever the case is. You have to believe it for yourself. So one of the simplest tips that I tell people all the time is something as easy as looking in the mirror and just saying something really powerful to yourself. The best one that has made people cry, and I only say that because that's how meaningful and emotional that it is I accept myself. That's the biggest thing that, you know, we question ourselves. We have so many doubts. We need to accept ourselves. And that's a really big step.
Accept ourselves for who we are.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of remind, and I agree with you, but you reminded me of a video on the internet of this little girl who jumps up in the mirror and she says to in the mirror, "I am great. I'm awesome. There's nothing I can do."
Can you imagine her strength today?
I saw that video. Because, you know, that's like, I don't even know, that's 10 years old now or something. I'm not sure, but it's a really great reminder that,
it
you
is.
Know what, that sort of talk, you know, maybe it's important that we have
that. And one more little tip that I'll share is everyone has a smartphone with, you know, you can record audio. Record some affirmations in your own voice and play those back to yourself. And that's also very, very powerful.
Very powerful. Yeah. Sort of a nice little external reminder to you. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our chat with Jessica. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success. And what a show we've been having. I've been hanging out with Jessica Dumas. And Jessica, you know, has her own company and she's involved in the whole coaching area and facilitation and all sorts of really fascinating, interesting work. Jessica, if you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
I think one of the tips that I'd like to share with anybody that anybody could really benefit from is to know that Any obstacles that you feel like are coming up in, you know, a journey that you want to take, that's okay. Like obstacles are part of that journey. It's not signs to stop. I think that's something that everybody needs to hear.
Yeah. So I think that's a really important message actually to get out there that, you know, part of the journey is I often say peaks, valleys, and detours.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And I agree with you 100%. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. And Jessica, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're a blast to interview. So
thank you so much.
I also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. And of course, as listeners, if you have an idea for a program or a question or a thought, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And always remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.